You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
I'm not bringing this up to say we were right. I'm bringing this up to say it's shocking what some of these polling aggregate places were doing. Mm-hmm. They made it look like a wave election by putting in a bunch of BS Republican polls, putting in a bunch of BS slanted polls. And we kept saying, and the people who really know kept saying, this doesn't feel like a normal wave year. It could be. It should be. You look at inflation. You look at what people are saying. It should be a wave year. It never felt like one to us here.
No, it didn't. And it did not materialize, did it? Now, that's Joe Scarborough of MSNBC, Morning Joe, mocking, having some fun and hilarity and laughs and saying, just short of saying, we told you this probably wasn't going to happen. He's allowed to do that. He's allowed to do that. And many of us, including yours truly, were pretty convinced, not so 100%, but I would have put money down it was going to be a red wave. It turned out to be a trickle, a red splash, whatever you want to call it. It fell short in several areas. We're going to break some of that down for you as we go through today's program. Where we stand right now, of course, the Senate battle is still critical. Nevada and Arizona vote counts are taking center stage. They're still going through counts in Nevada and Arizona. Carrie Lake apparently has won as the governor of Arizona. That appears to be, and I stress again, that's what we're seeing. And, of course, aside from trying to decide if Blake Masters is going to win in Arizona, and then see how Nevada comes out, we have the Georgia Senate, and that will not be decided for fact until at least December 6th, because they're going to have a runoff. It appears, everything said, Republicans will have the House, but it's not going to be the big, massive wave we expected. It's very interesting on some reasons as to why the Republicans fell short. Let me give you a couple that are here that I'm not saying these are conclusive, but we're seeing an exit poll that 68% of unmarried women favored the Democrats. And at the same time, Republicans won 6 million more votes than Democrats in House races, but still gained few seats. And then you also have a report dealing with the New York State, and there is, actually, we saw a big turn for Republicans in New York State, except for Lee Zeldin's race to be the governor. Apparently, Jewish American vote for GOP at the highest rate in decades, and a lot of that might have contributed there, plus redistricting, no money really being put into races. They thought it was going to be a walk-in. And Zeldin came within 5 points of Hochul in the same state that Biden beat Trump by 20 points. We're going to be joined by John LeBoutier to take a closer look at that. And by the way, if the GOP ends up controlling the House, which, as I say, is more and more likely, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio says you can expect our whistleblowers, with all their stories and facts, testifying about the rotten FBI leadership. And there's a new game out. It's a death game. Is it a joke? Is it real? Is it modern-day Hunger Games? We will get into that. And remind you right now that you can go to rumble.com, and in the search engine, Larry Connors USA. Go to Larry Connors USA, one word. It'll take you right to our studio. You can join us in studio for the rest of the program. If you can't do it now, you can watch it later at your pleasure. And also reminding you, all of our programs are later put up audio versions on our podcast. Again, you know where to find them. Larry Connors, USA. It's so simple. Oh, and I got to have this. Hoorah! I Semper Fi to my fellow Marines. This is the 247th birthday of the U.S. Marines. And actually, the first amphibious reconnaissance company can be credited with the introduction of that hoorah in the Marine Corps in 1953. That would be shortly after the Korean War. So to my fellow Marines and to all patriots and all veterans, and tomorrow is Veterans Day, we thank each and every one of you for your service and for the families that were here for you while you were doing your duty. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
I personally know at least three people who got sick from mold. It's not uncommon for homes, businesses to have a leak somewhere, and it doesn't take long for mold to start growing. Well, of course, I recommend Wellington Environmental. You don't want a company that's just going to clean up the water. Wellington has 34 years of experience. In fact, hospitals often have Wellington inspect and treat mold. Do what they do. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Call Wellington for a mold inspection, air testing, professional remediation. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rated with a Better Business Bureau. Wellington Environmental. Your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
President Biden says he has no plans to change any direction in the next 2 years in office. Fudge.
75% of voters say the country is heading into the wrong direction despite the results of last night. What in the next 2 years do you intend to do differently to change people's opinion of the direction of the country?
Nothing, because they're just finding out what we're doing. The more they know about what we're doing, the more support there is.
I don't know about that. The more you understand what's going on, the more money you're losing, the more money you're paying for different things. I just pulled this piece off, and while Biden is defending his economic policies, here's the latest consumer price report from October showing the Labor Department's consumer price index rose by 0.4% from September. Food prices for home, buying food for your home, up 0.4% in October. Now, that's still lower than the 0.7 rate in August and September, but it's still going to be going up. And Biden is still spinning it all as positive, saying this is a much-needed break in inflation at the grocery store as we head into the holidays. And he urged patience once again, declaring, we're seeing progress in getting inflation under control. And wait a minute, remind me, am I wrong? Did I not remember hearing originally the message we got from him 1 year ago? 1 year ago? Inflation was just going to be transitory? I'm thinking, if I'm sent to hell, I hope it's transitory. No, maybe I don't, because if that's the meaning of transitory, I need to change that subject. I want to get off of that right now. But I'll tell you this, when Biden is saying clearly everything in your elections in your midterm show, I'm on track. People are buying into what I've got. They're going to be with me. They understand it. And the more they see it unfold, the more they will buy into it. They'll be part of it. I say the more they're likely they're going to be hostage to it. What say you? Well, let's get an opinion here from Congressman Brady of Texas and his reaction to Biden. And I don't see any reason to change anything.
It's a real gut punch, I think, to American voters if they wake up this morning hearing that, because obviously while the president insists inflation is zero, what we know is the core inflation was the highest of the Biden presidency last month. Healthcare, housing and rents had the highest increases last year ever recorded. And so a lot of Americans today in this cruel economy of Joe Biden's, look, they're skipping meals. They're delaying retirement. They're digging into savings. They're looking for extra work to try to figure out a way to try to survive in Joe Biden's economy. And so, look, I think the president is severely disconnected from the real world. And that's why I think voters put those checks and balances on this presidency by electing what will be a Republican majority in the House.
Yeah, I think we're going to definitely have a Republican majority in the House, but it's not the success, the rah-rah parade many of us were expecting, hoping, really believed was going to happen. Now, I've always told you, you can't really buy the polls because the only poll that counts is on Election Day. So I had one foot in believing it was going to be that and one foot saying, not yet, not just yet. And it kind of falls in between right now. I'm looking at some of the latest reports here. Here's a report from CNN and NNN. Control of the Senate is still in the balance, as I was telling you earlier. Nevada and Arizona, the count's still underway. Still underway. What'd they have in Florida? 7 to 8 million ballots. They got them all counted in one day. But they just can't seem to pull that off in Nevada and Arizona. It could be that in Arizona, the Secretary of State, Hobbs, is also running to be governor against Carrie Lake, and maybe she was deciding a little drip, drip, drip until we can find some more might help. I don't know. But right now it appears, as I said earlier, that Carrie Lake will end up being governor in Arizona. But the Republicans, at the same time, while those seats are still in play, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, those three Senate seats. The Republicans, according to this CNN report, says Republicans are inching like an inchworm toward a slim majority in the House as counting continues across the country. So when we apparently, the White House has already made it clear, because there is going to be this runoff election between Raphael Warnock, current senator, and, of course, Herschel Walker. The official word within an hour ago from the White House, Biden will do whatever is helpful for Warnock in the runoff. I'm wondering, will he want Biden with him or not? Now, based on the way these numbers went down this time, it might be okay to have Biden on stage. Oh, I know, 8% looking inflation and gas prices still going up, and your turkey, by then you'll have consumed, and probably, if you're lucky, well, you won't have leftovers still by December 6th. If you did, I wouldn't be eating it. But if you're lucky, you'll still have some money to be eating something come December 6th. The administration, I'm afraid, is going to take what did happen in exactly the opposite direction that Republicans and conservatives were taking when some of the original numbers and projections were coming out. There's going to be a red wave, so we're on track. This is good. We don't need to change anything. I've got a guest coming up later, and he said there is one spot that became a blind spot, or basically a spot they wanted to walk past quickly and ignore, that he thinks really did hurt Republicans. Now, according to polls, it still was not a big issue, but maybe it still was. I told you a moment ago that single women, let me get the exact numbers here for you again, because I don't like giving you half information, unmarried women disrupted the red wave, and it might be because of the very issue this guy is going to come back and talk about, that is possibly Roe v. Wade. For many, as I had said repeatedly, was back in the summer, and things change and evolve, and there are new things to hook into and to buy into and find some new battleground. But there are some that have a single issue. It doesn't make any difference what is happening in their economy, their job, or anything else. This is their issue. And if you're not on that side of that issue with them, they're again you. However, if you're with them, they'll be there for you. If unmarried women are partly being blamed as a disruption of the red wave, you got Biden gloating somewhat, and understandably. There was an interview with Chris Kobach, the former Kansas Secretary of State, a contributor to Breitbart News from time to time, the new Kansas Attorney General-elect, and he discussed how he was able to make his political comeback, what's on the agenda for his term. And part of it, as they were getting into talking about different things, they were talking about the very fact that, yes, women had a big effect on the red wave being disrupted, just not hitting the shore like you were expecting. It's not clear from what I have here in front of me if you're going to put it all onto the issue of Roe v. Wade, but that's certainly possible. Now, the other thing to keep in mind, that if Republicans get control of the House, which it seems that that's going to happen, that will happen, you can't impeach a president unless you have both houses of Congress involved. You know that by now because we watched Trump go through it twice. The House can bring the charges. The Senate serves as a jury and either issues a conviction or doesn't. So if Republicans are going to control the House, they made it very clear. We are going to go after those who created the lockdowns unnecessarily, that lied to us about COVID, lied to us about this and that, how they tried to shackle us to a belief that Russians were controlling the last election, that when Trump won against Hillary, and that the Russians were still trying to control things, and we've got numerous pieces of Russian disinformation still circulating, such as the Hunter Biden laptop. But of course, in the 18 months after the Biden laptop was unveiled by the New York Post, just weeks before the Biden-Trump election, it was being accepted by the Post and those who had discredited it as, yeah, that was fact. Well, why did it continue to live in the existence of the shadows and its Russian propaganda? Because members of the FBI and the Department of Justice, the Attorney General's office, said it was absolute pack of lies created by Russians. So with the House being controlled by the Republicans, there will be a come-to-Jesus meeting on the floor of the House and getting testimony from what some of these people know is going on behind the scenes, and names will be called and fingered out, and they will be held accountable. That is a good part. Now, that's not like it getting into an impeachment of Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas or even President Biden or anyone else. But it will be at least an exposed situation of the facts in front of the House. And in the one man already talking about, I'm going to make sure it happens, is Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio. Now, this time around, he is most likely going to end up being elected as chair of the House Judiciary Committee. And he says, my guns are ready.
We're committed to getting after it as aggressively as we can, doing it in a way that's consistent with the Constitution. I will just tell you what a report said, because one of the whistleblowers that came to us, and it was supported by others, said the FBI leadership, again, not rank-and-file agents, but the FBI leadership, and specifically the Washington field office, is rotted to its core. So that means you've got to have a major overhaul.
Yeah.
And the way
right.
you do that in Congress is you show exactly how bad it was. That's our job. And then you hopefully, by showing it, that pushes them back and gets them to throttle back all the crazy things they're doing. And then you have to get a new president who will bring in the appropriate attorney general who's willing to fix things up and clean things up.
Yeah, that's what you're going to need to do. Now, again, that was part of an interview he gave with Breitbart. And the other point that he brings up is, he says, if you're going to have in this great country, you need a Justice Department. You can't have one that's going to be political, that is targeting political opponents, not treating people fairly under the law. And that, unfortunately, is what we have had in a huge way, as evidenced by the record number of FBI agents who have now come to us to talk to us as whistleblowers. Now, some of them might be coming forward saying, okay, I know we're going to be exposed. I want to get on the correct side of this, and I'll be a whistleblower. Sometimes that happens with inside criminal elements. You understand that. You've seen enough police and drama shows. They're trying to get to the guy at the top. They get all the underlings, and they start snitching and rolling over to save their own hide. I'm not suggesting all these FBI whistleblowers are like that, but there will probably be some that say, you know what? When the pendulum starts to swing, I don't want my head in the guillotine. Survival instinct kicks in. Because these whistleblowers, based upon what we've heard already from Senator Grassley and Johnson, who did get reelected, thank God, both of them, they say there's not just talk, they've got evidence, they got names, they got documentation. That's the kind of stuff that will be laid out in front of Jim Jordan's House Judiciary Committee. I am looking forward to that. Get a big box of popcorn, sit back, and let the show begin. So once again, back to this red wave that was or was not, and how Biden's reacting to it. I want you to hear some of that, and then we're going to talk about what happened in New York.
Larry Connors, USA.
While the press and the pundits are predicting a giant red wave, it didn't happen. Democrats had a strong night, and we lost fewer seats in the House of Representatives than any Democratic president's first midterm election in the last 40 years. And we had the best midterm for governors since 1986.
Many analysts say if Democrats lose control of the House, it may largely be because of New York State, where Republicans have flipped four congressional seats. Democratic Congressmember Sean Patrick Maloney suffered one of the most shocking losses Tuesday. He's the chair of the powerful Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. According to the Cook Political Report, Maloney is the first sitting House Campaign Committee chair to lose a race in 30 years.
That is part of a report, and of course began with President Biden talking about, while the press and pundits were talking about a red wave, I don't think so. But she, with the Democracy Now! Independent News, which, read between the lines, is really leftist news, but they want you to believe it's independent, is pointing out that New York State is having some difficulty because of various seats that were lost, part of it because of redrawing lines, some of it having to do with not putting money into campaigns when maybe it would have helped. And then, as I pointed out early, Lee Zeldin, congressman running against incumbent Governor Hochul, who, of course, came in after Cuomo had to go by the side of the road after the hashtag MeToo scandals. Zeldin lost by apparently only 5 points. And the critical thing to keep in mind there is that in New York State, between Biden and Trump, when they were running, Biden won New York State by 22 points. That was a fascinating run by Zeldin. And he's already acknowledged that. But, of course, in the end, standing up, taking the victory bow, was the incumbent, Kathy Hochul.
Tonight, I want to speak directly to New Yorkers. Tonight, you made your voices heard loud and clear. And you made me the first woman ever elected to be the governor of the state of New York. I'm not here to make history. I'm here to make a difference.
I wonder where the word difference fits in dealing with crime. Because during the debate, she didn't indicate anything she would do that's any different, thinking, we're doing just fine here. And in fact, I distinctly remember when Zeldin, who had been attacked on stage at one point while he was speaking, by a guy with a knife, and if he had not seen him in time and warded his arm off in just the right time, he could have hit his carotid. He could have died on stage. Then you've got the case where there was a shooting, probably unrelated to any kind of politics, just gang shooting outside his home, and his daughters were home in the house by themselves. And then you got people being shoved in front of subways for no reason, or walking down the street and being assaulted, beaten, raped, possibly. I wonder where any of that fits into what she's going to do to make New York even better and safer. When these things have happened and when it was brought up into the debate, she looked at Zeldin and said, why are you so concerned about that? See, she's not concerned because she doesn't walk the streets of New York unprotected at all. My next guest coming up, John LaBoutière, former New York congressman, Reaganite, came in during those years, not a Trump supporter. I want to get his take on the New York race involving, of course, Zeldin and Hochul, the final decision, and what else is happening in New York State and what that might bode for the rest of the nation eventually, and, of course, the so-called red wave. For some companies, loyalty is a lost word. You give a company your business, your years, but in the end, you're just a number. But at Ackerman Toyota, loyalty is appreciated. Thousands of customers personally know this. New Ackerman customers quickly see it. Loyalty defines Ackerman Toyota for all customers and employees. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
That music has got to get my guests fired up. Always glad to have on board John LaBoutière, former New York congressman. Welcome aboard again, sir.
Thank you, Larry. I think that's Elvis's version of Jailhouse Rock, I think.
Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And we play another version by Mae Thornton of Hound Dog, which I think is the most fascinating version of it ever, better than Elvis. But that being said, let's go back to, as we were discussing last week, you said it would be an uphill run all the way for Zeldin, that it's such a blue state, he wasn't going to be able to pull it off. Obviously, you were correct. You know your knowledge. You've been in politics all the way back to Reagan years, and, of course, more recently out. But at the same time, he got within 5 points. Zeldin said that's a damn good run, in his opinion, and I would agree. What about you?
Well, I think it is a good run given the state. Ran a good campaign. Can't fault his campaign at all. It's just aren't enough Republican voters or independents who will vote Republican. Now, out here where Zeldin comes from, he's from Suffolk County at the end of Long Island. I'm from Nassau County, neighboring counties. Zeldin swept Long Island. He did great, and he swept in 4 Republican congressmen from Long Island,
right,
and a bunch of state senators. But that phenomenon that he had going on Long Island did not stretch over the whole state the same way. So Republicans had a great night in New York on the congressional and local level, but not statewide. And I said this a few times, I think, with you, that
yes,
we have not had in New York a statewide elected Republican for controller, attorney general, governor, lieutenant governor, for almost 20 years. You know, it's just all the Republican voters, not all of them, but a lot of them have left. They went to Florida, North Carolina. You know, they don't like the high taxes, and they're out of here. Like California.
Yeah.
Republican voters have left California, gone to Arizona, Oregon, and Nevada.
And there were some, I was looking at some of the different reasonings behind it. One thing that came up immediately was, well, there was redistricting that changed things. Is that a legitimate issue?
Yes. Oh, God, yeah, huge. That didn't affect the governor's race, of course.
No, not the
governor's
race.
That's another right, but that definitely affected, and it may, Lee Zeldin, in a funny way, may have delivered the House majority to the Republicans.
Yeah.
Because, well, like I said, we picked up 4 on Long Island, but that, let's see, 2 of them were already Republicans. So they picked up 2, and 1 in Westchester when they beat Sean Patrick Maloney.
Yeah.
And that's 3, and it might be another one. It might be like 4 pickups. And look how close it is. I mean, this thing is single digits in the House to determine which party controls it.
So now, I understand
3 or
Sean,
4 from New York State. Geez. Yeah.
I understand Sean Patrick Maloney. That's 30 years that's been held. You know, so that was a major overturn. And some are saying he just didn't seem to be interested. He wasn't really campaigning. It's like, I've got it in my pocket. I've got it. I don't need to do anything. And he was over in Europe at different events, supposedly raising money for Democrats. Was it a lack of that they just thought they had it in a lock and they didn't have to do anything?
Well, none of that. I've not heard any of that. I'm not discounting it. I feel the guy works very hard. But what happened was they redistricted in the summer and created a district that he lives in, but it wasn't the area that he represented as a member of Congress. So, in effect, even though his house is in there, it's new territory. And he was running against the guy that beat him, Mike Lawler, who is a state legislator, who is an elected official in that district. They probably knew him a little better than Sean Patrick Maloney.
What about the money?
Who had 3 months. Oh, my God, did you see the money that they put in for the Republicans to beat Sean Patrick Maloney?
Yeah.
They put $6.5 million into that race.
Yeah.
Because they figured, hey, we can knock off the chairman of the DCC, Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. However, you know, if you're Sean Patrick Maloney, he lost his seat. He's no longer going to be a congressman, Larry. But he did a great job. I mean, they almost kept the House. The red wave was blunted for whatever reason. And inside the Democratic Party, they're ecstatic with how well Tuesday went. Whereas in our party, we're distraught over how this thing went. We should have had a huge day.
Yes.
With inflation and an unpopular president.
Where do you lay the blame?
And frankly, well, a couple things. First, the Dobbs decision on abortion. That thing motivated millions of women to register and vote. And they did, and young people to vote. And that is the single number one factor that blunted, if there was a red wave coming, the women voting offset that. That, to me, that was the single biggest factor. And then on the Senate side, and I have one thing on the House side. On the Senate side, you know, I don't think we're going to win the Senate. But we could have, because if we'd had the other guy in Pennsylvania, McCormick, instead of Oz, we'd have won that seat easily. It's a Republican seat. We would have won it. But Trump picked Oz, who is a terrible candidate. And I still think Herschel Walker will lose in Georgia. It may take till the runoff, of course.
I hope
he's,
obviously.
He's a terrible, candidate.
I agree with you. I agree. We did not have the best. And Trump, of course, has turned on Melania about why did you talk me into supporting Oz? I wouldn't have done it otherwise. I don't even know where that goes. But Fetterman winning, I'm looking at something from the MSNBC, Katie Turr, saying, you know, Fetterman, he could be at some point, you know, he ran in the super red parts of Pennsylvania, the way he ran ahead of Biden, ahead of Trump, he might be presidential timber. Oh, my God.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm going to tell you, I think that he fits the state politically better than Oz, of course. I mean, Fetterman sort of looks like Pennsylvania. You know, it's a pretty tough place.
Yeah, you're right.
We got so many great football players come from Western Pennsylvania. Johnny Unitas, Joe Namath. And Fetterman's cut from that cloth. Big, tall, tough guy, bald.
Always in a hoodie.
Shorts and sweatshirts. Yeah. built like a basketball player.
Let me raise something with you and how much this also affected. I don't know how much it affected New York, but in Florida they're also seeing it. But they're pointing out that Zeldin, of course, Jewish Republican, in trying to oust Hochul failed. But Zeldin got 80% of the Hasidic Jews in neighborhoods, I should say, in Brooklyn, an overwhelming percentage of the Orthodox Jewish vote. And then across the nation, midterm, according to Fox News, the vast majority of the Jewish electorate, 65%, still vote Democrat, but support for a Republican Party is steadily rising.
Well, not, I don't know how steady it is. But, I mean, I got a third of the Jewish vote when I ran in a very Jewish district against a Jewish Democratic incumbent congressman. I got a third. That's 40 years ago. So it's not that I'll tell you, if you're going to do these numbers, I'll tell you one that really shocked me.
Sure.
Herschel Walker in Georgia, where he's a football god, he got 8% of the black vote.
Yeah.
8%. Now, of course, he's running against a black man. But one of the things you run a guy like Herschel for is to try to break away some of that black vote from the Democrats, and it didn't work.
So the libertarian independent type candidate pulled some votes, so that's why they had the runoff coming up. How do you think that's going to shake down? You think Walker's not going to make it across the goal line?
I don't think he's going to make it. But and the shame, it's the same as Oz in Pennsylvania. These are two seats that we could have won this year if we'd had good candidates. And anything's better than Herschel as a candidate. He's just a dreadful candidate. I don't know that he really even likes it. I mean, how can he like getting his brains beaten in every day with these stories? And, I mean, Larry, honestly, can you see this guy walking down the hall in Congress and someone coming up and asking him, well, what's your position on raising the debt ceiling? He wouldn't know what that is any more than my cat does.
Or John Fetterman in the Senate, in my opinion.
Fetterman's a sharp guy.
I'm going to give him allowances because of the stroke, and I feel bad for him for that point, but when he's hunger for power and he's in there, I do have some concerns. John, as always, we thank you and appreciate you taking time, giving us a great perspective on this, sir.
I thank you, Larry. Let's talk again soon.
We will. We'll make a point of it. In fact, probably right after December 6th, thanks, the Georgia election. Thank you, John.
Yeah, leading up to that, let's do that for sure.
All right, let's do that. Thank you, sir. Coming up, something that might be a real-life Hunger Game that you could be killed if you lose. Is it real or fake, a parody? What is it?
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Here's exciting news for Cafe Napoli. Soon there will be Napoli Sea. Unique, exquisite, the finest, freshest seafood, lobster, crab, the best caviar. Napoli Sea will be next door to Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles. So it's going to be easy to satisfy your seafood craving or the finest Italian food. Napoli Sea, coming soon. Joining Cafe Napoli, St. Charles, Counting Country, and Clayton.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So glad to have Mark on board being my director for me today. Quentin is off today, but Quentin sent me something early in the morning or last night. I don't know. I was up to 3:30 in the morning working on, believe me, I'm writing a couple of articles for some pieces I want to see about getting published. I'm going to share one of them with you before we wrap up today so you kind of get to see some of what I'm working on, but I didn't check the time this came in from Quentin, but it was, I didn't notice it till I actually got up later this morning. I think I had after maybe 2.5 hours sleep, so I think I'm operating pretty well, considering. All right, he sent it to me at around 10:50 last night. I was awake, I just wasn't paying attention. And when I first saw it, I thought, it's got to be a joke or a parody, and he even acknowledged, Quentin, my other director said, you know, I saw this, I thought, this can't really be real. Do you remember, and how many of you seen the Hunger Games when they first came out? You know, it's science fiction, dystopian adventure films based on a trilogy of that they choose somebody in a poverty-stricken area that could be competing against someone else. And the only way you get out of it is to get out alive. You got to kill the others before they kill you. And everybody is enjoying it except, of course, for the contestants. I don't know if you've watched a program called Blacklist, starring James Spader. It has now nine annual episodes, and each one has, I don't know, 14 to 20 pieces inside each episode that they break out. And in one of these games, rich people pay a lot of money to come somewhere to a very special place where they are all given wristbands, and at a certain time of night after they're having their drinks and their food and having great fun, one of the armbands will begin to flash, and that person, their life is put into jeopardy. They're put into maybe a concealed walled glass, double-thick, explosive-proof glass where people can watch, and they're in there, they're trying to disarm a bomb, and they get a certain amount of time. If they don't do it, it blows up, and it splatters them all over the inside. And while everybody watching is shocked, then they begin to applaud because it's to them it's theater watching someone die. This stuff that Quentin sent me, I've since researched it, and it's also now on Forbes listing it. A VR headset that will actually kill you if you die in the game. And they say it's not a headline. Palmer Luckey, the original founder of Oculus VR, I guess that's the way it's called, sold his company to Facebook. He's been working on national defense since he left. And what he's been doing is something weird and truly insane, the way it's described by the Forbes writer. He has a custom-made VR headset that will kill a player if they die in a video game. Like, I mean, literally, kill you. Now, he describes in his headset how he made a sword art online style, you die in the game, you die in real life headset. In the series, players are trapped in a giant immersive VR combat sim, and they're laced into the nerve gear tech. They got to figure out a way to win or escape, and various things are in here that they put this headset on. It's based on a Japanese novel or something of that nature. The device is connected to three explosive charge modules above the screen aimed at your forehead. And if you don't get out in time and save yourself, then it's going to blow up. The microwave emitter goes off, taking off your head. I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, they have to fight their way through a 100-floor dungeon to escape a mad scientist. And if they don't get through the dungeon, don't get to the escape route in time, they don't make it at all. Now, again, on one hand, you say, this can't really be going on. And yet it is. Except for one part of it. He admits that so far, the headset, you want to know the price? Boy, are you thinking of doing this? You thinking about getting somebody to play the game? Not you, but someone else? Or you think you're so good? Give me the headset. I can get out. I don't have to worry about it. Really? You want to know how much the headset cost? That's already rigged with explosives that would go off blowing your brains out, literally? I can't give you the cost. No, it's not that issue that if you have to ask, you can't afford it. It might come down to that. But the only saving grace in this entire story I just gave you comes with this line from the developer. The headset is not available to buy. So far. Good God, where are we gone with this country? I mean, that's a real device. Look up Forbes magazine. It's got it in there. And other sources. Thanks, Quentin, for making me feel really good about myself today. Coming up, more about Joe Biden saying, I'm not going to change a thing. No.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.